people realize that biblical prophecy, however, is dual, that there is a double meaning. There is a prophecy of some ancient city-state, such as that of Isaiah 14 and Ezekiel 28, about the prince of Tyre, or the prince or the king of Babylon, and the city of Babylon. Well, then why does it say in the book of Revelation in the 18th chapter, in this modern age, which John wrote in his prognostications about the future, Babylon is fallen, is fallen? Students of eschatology know that the ancient city of Babylon had fallen long before the Apostle John ever even wrote those words in the book of Revelation. Why would John write in vision about two collapses of Babylon? Well, because the Bible deals in symbolism and it deals in duality. And because ancient Babylon is found in a modern resurrection of a conglomerate of 10 nations that is called Babylon the Great, in Isaiah 47, the daughter of Babylon, a great religious organization, is revealed. In Revelation 17 and 18, Babylon the Great, a great religio and political empire, which will be underneath the rulership of two great leaders called a beast in symbol in biblical prophecy and a false prophet in biblical and prophetic symbolism. And they are to exist during this latter day. So the fall, the collapse of ancient Babylon was a type or a forerunner of the ultimate and final collapse of a modern Babylonish system. When Jesus talked about the destruction of Jerusalem, it occurred, and it occurred to the living generation that heard him say it. In 71 A.D., that city was absolutely leveled, and when you read some of the descriptions of the unbelievable Holocaust the Jewish people went through during that time under the armies of Titus, who was the Roman legionnaire, the general that came in there and destroyed it, where they impaled thousands, put bitumen or pitch on their corpses, and lit up the skies with the burning bodies of hapless people around that city who did not flee when their ministers and religious leaders actually told them to do so. Tradition says that the high priest actually heard a literal voice inside the temple telling him to tell the people to get out, and some of them did and fled to Pella. And you can read that in Josephus' writings, a historian who lived during the time. And so Jerusalem was destroyed. Well, then, in a sense, everything Jesus said, except some of the most important portions of the latter part of Matthew 24, really did come to pass. There were wars and rumors of wars. There was drought. There was famine. There were great earthquakes. And Jerusalem was destroyed. But what about the remainder of that chapter? They didn't see great signs from heaven. They didn't see the heavens rolled back as a scroll, and certainly Jesus Christ of Nazareth did not come to stand on the earth in his second coming at that time. You know, the Apostle Paul thought he was writing during our day. He thought it was the time of the end. He wrote about the time of the end and during all of his life up until the time of 2 Timothy when he wrote the young evangelist and said, I know the time of my departure is nigh. I have fought a good fight. I've run a good course. I am willing to be offered in the second Roman imprisonment when finally the Apostle Paul apparently was thrown to wild beasts and was killed. Up until that moment of his life, he expected to be alive when Jesus stood on the earth. He said in 1 Corinthians 15 and verse 50 and 51, in the moment, in the twinkling of an eye at the last trump, he said, we shall be changed. He said in 1 Thessalonians 4, 16 and 17, then we which are alive and remain shall be caught up together with them, that is the dead in Christ, and we shall be with the Lord. He thought of including himself. We will be there. It didn't occur to the Apostle Paul. He was not living in the time of the end. Now, there are two ways you can approach this. One is as a cop-out. You can say, well, we're not living in a time of the end either. We, in 1979, are not living in the time of the end. Or you can say, was the Apostle Paul living in the time of the end? And your answer is, yes, he was. For him. It was the time of the end. For him. And for his whole generation. Now, down through the Middle Ages, even when Luther tapped up the door of Wittenberg, the 99 Theses, which began the great rift in the then universal church and resulted in the real Protestant Reformation. You know that one of Luther's points was, he said, time cannot go on, things are so horrible. He could point to disease, vast sicknesses like the Black Death and the plague and so on, and unbelievable squalor and poverty and sickness, the loss of life, deformities, everything of the kind because of the lack of hygiene, the very short life expectancy of those people then, wars, tortures, everything imaginable. And Luther said, surely things are so bad, time just cannot go on. And he believed, because he could read Matthew 24, he could read the same Bible you can read today in a different language, and he believed he was living in a time of the end, but he was wrong. Jesus didn't come in Luther's day, but Luther was living in a time of the end for Luther. In the days of the Revolutionary War, preachers and rough-hewn log churches in the United States would propound these same scriptures and say, we're living in the time of the end, and surely this war with King George, and your old brother so-and-so was killed the other day, and the stock run off, and his wife was raped, and his son was taken off to serve in the British Army, and isn't it horrible, and their little farm was put to the torch, and so on. Why, surely this has got to be the time of the end, and it was for them. And in the Civil War, many a preacher in the United States, North and South, said this bloodletting between the states means we, the people of God, are in great tribulation. They said it in World War I. They said it in World War II. Surely things can't get much worse than this. We've got to be living in the time of the end. And they were all wrong, and you are right. And let me tell you why you are right, and I'm right, and we're right, that we, not Paul, are living in the time of the end. You ever heard of the Club of Rome? The Club of Rome is not a religious organization. The Club of Rome is like a collection of think tanks in one sense, because it's supported by over 100 nations of very serious scientists who put together all of the known quantums, the known curves, trends, conditions, socioeconomic conditions in the world, not religious conditions. And they study, and they look at such basics as the population explosion, as energy, environment, the ecology, government, the military, the economy of the world, and they look at all the interrelationships of all of these, because obviously energy and the economy are absolutely interrelated. And it's like a superposition of one of these see-through plastic presentations, if you've ever seen one, where you would have a graph or a chart on the wall. Now, on your graph or your chart on the wall, you would have one that says population, and you would look in terms of tens of millions, and you put the years down of where the population increase is going in nations like China, in Russia, especially in some of the most heavily populated areas of the world, like Indonesia, the island of Haiti, and other areas where people are almost wall to wall, the nation of India, etc. And you would look at runaway populations in many countries, with a very few exceptions, like Japan, that has achieved near zero growth, and of course you've heard about Singapore, that has zero growth. And then you would put that curve on the wall, and you would say, hey, by about 1990-some or 2002, then the population of the world is going to double. Then they say in 35 years it will double again. Then in 17 years it will double again. And then in 9 years it will double again. And we're all crazy if we think that's going to happen. It won't happen, because it's absolutely impossible for it to happen, because the world cannot stand the impact of the present population and the unbelievable voracious devouring of non-renewable Earth's resources by the multiple billions of human beings on this Earth right now today means an assault upon the narrow, the fragile, and the very vulnerable ecosystems of the world that are such that we are so spoiling our own nest that the very future of all of civilization is at stake with the simple pressure of one intranational, intra-religious, intra-socioeconomic pressure that has nothing to do with what color you are, what language you speak, what flag you salute, what is in your mind, what you believe, where you go to church. The simple pressure of people means we're living in the time of the end, and the Bible doesn't even say anything about the population explosion. Yet the Club of Rome can show you by superposition of a plastic overlay that you're not going to be able to live in a world of equilibrium with your grandkids dandled on your knees for the next 20 years without gigantic social upheavals in the United States and around the world, because what happens elsewhere affects what happens everywhere. And we today are like the proverbial pond where you throw the slightest pebble in and eventually the little ripples will reach the farthest shore. The world has shrunk so dramatically that what occurs in Sri Lanka or what occurs in Vietnam or Cambodia affects the people in China, which affects the Soviet Union, which affects the United States, which affects the Middle East, and vice versa. Everything seems to hinge on almost everything. Now you have population. So far, so good. Let's superpose another problem, energy. They talk about 50 years known reserves in Saudi Arabia. Beautiful, but how long is 50 years, for pity's sake? I'm 48. You know, when somebody is 80, 85, 50 years seems like, well, that's a fairly short period of time. They still feel about like 19. They look out and they see the same colors, the same world is there. Their memory is sharp and clear. Their vital juices are still flowing. And life went by just kind of real rapid train ride there. It's all of a sudden it's gone. 50 years. They say 11 years of natural gas. They talk about non-renewable Earth's resources because no new oil is being made. They aren't burying any dinosaurs today. There aren't any great new upheavals of the Earth like the burial of whole continents and the rise and the submergence of continents, the time of the mountain building of the United States when the most gargantuan forces imaginable shaped the crust of this good green Earth of ours and buried beneath the surface of the Earth tons and tons of coal. It takes something like 20-some feet, doesn't it, of vegetation compressed down to give you 1 foot thick of anthracite. And those massive tides that left all of that rotting vegetation of the billions of logs and ferns and leaves and all of the tropical vegetation that once was on this earth when it was of a uniform climate around the world that is described in the book of Genesis, well, that was providing the energy for future generations. Eventually, all energy comes from the sun because those things grew from the rays of the sun. The sun in 1 second gives off more energy than the world has ever used from the time of Adam. But yet we exist because of that energy, and no new energy fuels, that is fossil fuels, are being stored today. We are rapidly devouring them all. And so the Club of Rome says, well, what about 1999 and 2003 and 2010? Well, that's when not only energy, but many other raw materials will become very scarce. And then they list a whole list of metals, the precious metals, and they look at tin, and they look at molybdenum, and some of the constituents of steel, and so on. And they say, well, we're X number of years away from running out of this and that. And these people will tell you from these many, many different sources, and especially the stockpiling of nuclear weapons, the potential of nuclear war, even by accident, that we're living in the last few decades of any kind of equilibrium in world conditions. That's where Bible prophecy comes in. Bible prophecy doesn't tell you some weird thing is going to happen right out of the blue when otherwise everything on earth is just in great shape. Bible prophecy doesn't say God is sitting up there in his heavenly armchair about to zap you people. It says God is sitting up there about to rescue all of us from doing to ourselves what we are doing. God is going to save us from ourselves. He's not interested in trying to kill us or put us to death. He's interested in trying to save us from what we're doing to ourselves.